From the studios in the Communication Arts and Sciences Building on the campus of Michigan State University, this is MSU Today. MSU Today is a lively look at MSU-related people, places, events, and attitudes put into focus by Russ White.
Thank you, Lynn. At 4:06 following news, I'll catch up with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon.
The pressures for these students to leave here more work ready, but at the same time more life ready. Those will remain things that we'll just continue to work with through the neighborhoods because the biggest cost of an education is not getting one.
President Simon and more on MSU Today after the latest news.
MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
I'm Russ White for MSU Today. Always privileged to be in the company of Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon for an update on all things MSU. And President Simon, I hope your summer's progressing well as we quickly approach fall semester.
Well, it seems to have gone faster and faster as I get older and older, but it's been a great summer. How about you, Russ, with your boys? They're near the end of their MSU career.
It's going faster than I expected as well, so appreciate you asking.
Did they do some good projects?
They've done their internships, and they're working at AFRIP doing things like that, so they're definitely enjoying the Spartan life.
Well, you know, I think this is typical of many of our students that I've encountered, not only around the state but around the country. Obviously, been doing primarily development work over the summer is, you know, really the fact that there are Spartans everywhere in these engaged positions, making a difference in communities and in companies and getting greater experience that is not simply something to put on your resume, but simply to accelerate your life's journey.
That's right. We have students doing a lot in Detroit these days. You're back from Traverse City, where our students have a big presence at the Traverse City Film Festival. And we sometimes get focused a lot, appropriately so, when we talk, President Simon, on the many great research and community engagement initiatives at MSU. We don't always talk enough about how good we are at educating the next generation. So talk about some of our efforts to educate our students.
Well, I think if you look at since we're a very large place, we still have the essence of a Common Core curriculum that tries to make sure that we build the fundamentals of liberal arts into every program. Many universities have devolved to a distribution requirement, particularly of our size. And I think the integrative studies is a course that people complain about when they take it. And when you talk with them 5 years after graduation, are glad that they had exposure to some of those issues that didn't seem as just in time as they might have liked during their college career. I think you add that to the mixture of thinking and doing, and internships, research experiences, the Spartans' Day of Giving, all those things contribute to having someone who really is using their talents and doing that in a way that connects to something that the phrase real life comes to mind, but are things that are that they need to do to be an impactful community member beyond their time as a student.
Are there things right now you're concerned about in the K-12 system that, of course, funnels students to us?
I all of us talk about K-12. I think if you look at Michigan, what you have is a declining demographic, but which means that legacy costs continue to eat up much higher proportions of the dollars that can go directly to educate students at a time when K-12 here is also a very fragmented system. There's sort of a common sort of curricular set of expectations, but very fragmented. And there are great schools and there are not so great experiences. What we do know from our own research is that if you have a couple of very bad experiences as a student, it's just hard to recover and catch up, particularly if you have high aspirations. And we should have high aspirations for all of our children to become a more economically competitive, but more connected to what will be the needs for the 21st century. And I'm always amazed, though, on the other hand, about when you watch and listen to students. Part of the board retreat was in Chicago, looking at our program there. We did an exercise as a class with some teachers, elementary school teachers, around, you know, science. And it was a very simple exercise, you know, with marshmallows and paper bags and straws and things that every school can have, not just the fancy equipment that we think about. And they've developed some extraordinary integrated science learning experiences for elementary school children on relatively straightforward materials. But, you know, in order to do those things with simplicity requires great intellect and creativity. You can always give somebody a 3D printer and say, isn't this really neat? But to be able to do things with this sort of minimal set of materials, you know, household things, and be able to then translate that to multiple lessons is really very impressive. And they've published some guides for other teachers in doing that. And you see in them the passion to really not simply have students get by and pass a test, but to really learn for the 21st century. And so I'm really pleased about that. I think the Urban Cohort Program is producing, you know, students who are really not simply filling a spot, but are going to be educational leaders for the future.
Visiting with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon, and not to be outdone, President Simon, by the previous two record-breaking fiscal years, MSU has closed the 2015-16 books on what is officially the most successful fundraising year in MSU history, a year in which $272 million was raised toward the Empower Extraordinary campaign goal of $1.5 billion. But what are your thoughts on donors and their belief in the mission and their supporting it here at MSU?
Well, I think that the trend is very positive, particularly with many people in our donor base still deeply rooted in Michigan. And with the ups and downs of not only the Michigan economy, but the U.S. economy. So it's a matter of, I think, recognizing that we can have our public heart. We can have that sort of sense of public responsibility that they see connected to our land-grant ideals. And at the same time, raise the dollars necessary to recruit and retain the very best people and give them the tools to be successful, much like the rest of the institutions in the league that we play in. And so that I think we've been gratified that message is getting a hold, and people are giving in varieties of ways. I'm pleased that the number of donors is up. Individual donors are up. And our faculty staff giving remains very strong. People who know us and know the needs around them. But, you know, if you put the number in context, it's relatively small. It's huge for us, but relatively small compared to some of our peers. Part of that is that we don't have fundraising associated with our medical schools there, grateful patients and other things, with the exception of Vet Med. And in many large institutions like ours, 40% plus of their campaign goal is achieved through hospitals and medically related things. So in that context, we have to feel really good about these numbers and the growth. And we still have a bit of work to do because we're about half of our goal for endowed chairs. And we're about 78% of our goal for scholarships, because those are the things for the future that make a huge difference.
And our facility for rare isotope beams and our National Superconducting Cyclotron Laboratory will host a public open house on August 20th. The public can tour the facilities, learn more about FRIB and NSCL, meet nuclear scientists and hear about their work on the frontiers of rare isotope research, and participate in several hands-on activities and demonstrations the whole family can enjoy and learn from. And it leads me to realize I haven't really asked you lately for an update on the effort, President Simon. How's the project faring?
Well, it's on schedule and on budget for major science programs. That's a huge issue. The review that we had this last month was positive. You know, we always have things to work on to be better. because you bring together really smart people from around the world, and they have ways of making you better. But we're on track and in a good position. It is important, I think, to do a tour now because we're going to be starting to put all this equipment in the tunnel, and this will be one of the final moments where people can actually walk through it and the general public can have a chance to see how big the tunnel is and what it looks like and all those kinds of things, because it'll be becoming filled with one-of-a-kind kinds of cryo-modules and stuff that we're making and putting in to keep on schedule. So it was important to take a pause here and give people a chance to have as much access as possible to the facility before all of these natural things provide barriers, because you can't climb over a cryo module. So whether you're a president or a general public, you're just not going to be able to do it. And this is a way to sort of see how big it is or how small it is, depending on your perception of it.
Your thoughts on a different matter, President Simon, the untimely loss of Mike Sadler, but the emotional memorial service at Spartan Stadium, and really we constantly get the feeling of the family atmosphere that Coach D'Antonio has created for Spartan football.
Well, I think that any time you have a young person who has, by anyone's definition, left Earth too soon, given their great potential to make contributions, it sort of evokes a time of reflection, and also the fact that there's no guarantees in life, whether you're 70 or 22 or 23. And it's always one of the things we do at the end of the year for currently enrolled students, because we have a memorial service for them and their families. They don't have the notoriety because of what happened to them, or the fact that they were involved in big plays, but they're still very important Spartans. So yesterday is always a time when you recognize that football has a way of capturing attachment to people, and the number of people who were there, probably many of whom had never met Mike Sadler, as a way of celebrating what's best about student-athletes, not what happens on the field, but what's best about them as human beings, and how sad we are to lose people with such great potential. But I feel the same way for names that no one knows, not only in our student body and across America, as we think about lives that are lost in a variety of ways where the potential is greatly unfulfilled. And that's why we do a memorial service, plant a tree, and have that kind of conversation.
President Simon, as of August 15th, Michigan State University is a smoke-free campus. There's a treasure trove of information for our listeners at tobaccofree.msu.edu, but just your general thoughts.
Well, you know, Kentucky did it before we did, so I don't think this is actually a path-breaking action at all. It was done after an enormous amount of consultation with our faculty, staff, and students. Obviously, not everyone agreed, but the preponderance of energy was behind moving in this direction. And again, it's not path-breaking by any definition. It's a little bit more difficult here because we're not interspersed with a city, so you can't easily go off university property as you can in some campuses in their implementation. But we'll continue to push smoking cessation programs for those who want them, and try to navigate through an implementation strategy that is both fair and disciplined, but at the same time is recognizing that this is going to be a little lumpy as we move through the next parts of this, but not, again, not path-breaking by any definition.
Simon, one of the sounds we hear in August that really tells us fall is on the way is the Spartan Marching Band gearing up, and I know the band is very important to you and Dr. Roy Simon. Again, just your your general thoughts on the band and its place at MSU.
Well, I think if you look back on the history of the Spartan Marching Band, of bands in colleges, they were a representation of the student body and the student body engagement, as well as showing off a great deal of talent by individuals who brought spirit to a game and entertainment to our fans, that was connected to the academic enterprise of the institution. And we happen to be a marching band where we draw students from well across the campus, so you can be a business major and still be a marching band member, which I think reflects this sort of low barriers. You can participate in lots of things at Michigan State beyond labeling yourself an X or a Y, because that's really where the world is moving. And so it's really, for me, a way of thanking people who are integral to great Saturdays, but often are never going to be on the front page after a great Saturday. And in the years when we weren't as good as we are right now, they provided just a lot of spirit and uplift for the student-athletes who are playing on the field or the basketball games or whatever with the pep bands, volleyball, whatever you pick. And so I think that's important to recognize those kids work really hard. They're not compensated. You know, and this is for love of their music and for love of an engagement of music and sport.
President Simon, as we close, I'd always like to ask you just a few things on your radar as fall semester gets underway. What should Spartans be keeping an eye out for?
Well, I think that we're an interesting point of inflection in our society, and not because of a political election, because there are lots of social issues that have come again to the fore. And if you are my age, you would have hoped we would have made much more progress on our capacity to respect one another, appreciate that we all can be different but yet still talented. And I think a lot of the things around us, whether it's terrorism, the greater inequality in our society, you know, without blaming who or what, it just is. And we can't have this sort of sense of inequality in our society, a fear, all the words that you have, and I think you have a strong democracy. I think the founding fathers, when they were working through all those beginning days, understood that, even though the country was coming out of a very difficult time and a time with lots and lots of divisions, that we had to move beyond those to take advantage of all of our talents and to have people feel as if they belonged. And because if people feel like they belong, they're going to do more. They're going to contribute more of their talent, not simply for themselves, but for the collective good. So there's both a philosophical, moral way of thinking about it, and there's a very practical way of thinking about it. And so the land-grant universities were formed at that point, I think, to try to bridge that some of those issues. And we're still, you know, struggling as a society with that. And the students, when they come back, will continue to struggle with that. And I try to remember that they're through their lives, they're digital natives, so they're very sensitive to what's said on digital media, but not necessarily analyzing it with the next burst of digital media. And they'll learn that here. It's one of the things that make them a great Spartan when they leave. But at the beginning, those 10,000 new people that we bring in as graduate and undergraduate students are just going to sort of have some difficult times. I think that the nature of the rhetoric around us is one that, again, pulls at civility, that it's essential for these people to get to know one another and take the time to do that without saying it's politically correct, because that's what I'm saying. I'm saying you just got to sort of listen and learn and talk to people with respect and civility while you deal with ideas that have very rough edges and can be very divisive as ideas. But how do you as a university embrace that, those rough edges, and not have them be a way of having rough edges with people? Because if people have rough edges, they tend not to listen and talk and learn. It's very selfish. It's not politically correct. It's very selfish, because you've got to be able to understand something that's not your world in order to know what to do with it. And embrace and understand and listen to ideas that you don't like. Maybe they're set in ways you don't like either, but that's really what educated people have done for a very long time, and I guess I'm a traditionalist in that regard amidst all this digital world. So I think it's going to be an interesting time for our students, for our community, for our world, to see how things unfold. At the same time, you know, the pressures to for these students to leave here more work ready, but at the same time more life ready, which means we have to prepare them for their ex job, not just their first one. And those will remain things that we just continue to work with through the neighborhoods, looking at the curriculum, changing things, adding things, subtracting things, trying to look at data and analytics in a way that lets us fine-tune what we're doing for particular people or groups of people, as opposed to having a generic solution that works almost for everybody but not quite. Because the biggest cost of an education is not getting one. You know, we're still pleased that actually the proportion of students with educational debt has actually dropped here, even though our population, our demographics, is pretty much unchanged in terms of socioeconomic class. We're still having 30% first gen Pell eligible students. 75% of our students come from families of $135,000 or less, 137, I guess maybe the number is now. But, you know, that's still a very different demographic than most top 100 places, most AAU places. And it will cause its own challenges for us. But at the same time, it's an enormous strength that we need to tap that, because I think that's the reflection of a great democracy.
President Simon, thanks for sharing your insights with us once again on MSU Today.
Well, you're welcome, Russ, and thanks for all the work that you all do throughout the year. And good luck for your sons, I think, as they go their senior year, right, or their senior plus year. I'm not quite sure they're going to stay on for a while.
That's right. I'm not sure where they are with all those AP credits, where they actually fall in. But that's Michigan State University.
They may not be. They may be like a lot of students. They just want to take more things. They don't want to graduate.
That's right. I tell them, don't rush. There's plenty of time for the real world.
Yeah, but there's so many opportunities. If you think about the new departments in bio, a combination of bio and engineering, the new computer algorithm-oriented department. Lots of great opportunities for students to be engaged in research and creativity, entrepreneurship, that I can understand why some of them want to not count those AP credits and stretch this out a bit.
You can keep up with Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon at president.msu.edu, and I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. John Madden is the director of the Spartan Marching Band, and he now joins Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis on the program. Here's President Simon.
Well, it's really a pleasure to welcome John Madden, who most folks know as the director of the Spartan Marching Band, but also is an extraordinary musician in his own right and directs many other ensembles on behalf of the College of Music, I would say award-winning ensemble. So it's really great to have you.
Thank you very much.
What is it that makes for you Michigan State home? Because there are many people who have jobs for a long period of time who would never describe their place of work as home.
Well, Just initially, sort of the reaction that sort of floods forward is the, and I mentioned my own family, my oldest siblings. I remember being a very little kid. We were on a vacation up north, and my oldest sister, Pat, spent her first year at Oakland University, close to home. I'm a Metro Detroit kid, and we left northern Michigan to come to East Lansing because Pat was coming to Michigan State University. So we were all in the car. And I remember kind of as she had to do whatever maybe it was an AOP or maybe it was a visit to an academic unit. I don't remember. I was a little kid. But just hearing of what Michigan State University was, because everybody's heard of it, but actually physically walking on the campus and reading the signs and seeing the buildings and getting the sense of the architecture and the community and just, you know, being an elementary school kid, it just sort of swarmed over me. Then, you know, fast forward, all the others come here, and then I go here and had the great fortune to come back. I suppose it just all sort of floods together as, you know, the kind of place you want to be. Where else would you want to be? It's always been a very home-like feeling to me. I'll give you one example. I'm the director of the band. There's so many symbolic things that the band, I think, iconically represents for the whole school, but none more than the alma mater, the MSU Shadows. If you think about the words in the shadows and the statement, "Beneath the pines will gather." So wherever I park my car, which is usually a different spot every day, the path to my office in the music building, I purposely walk underneath pine trees every single day. And I am not being sentimental. This is the God's honest truth, because there's something symbolic about that, which we do. There are pine trees all over our campus, but we gather and it just feels like something that is meaningful to me, and I try to get that message to the students as they have the chance to walk this path for a few years, and, you know. So it's a home for sure. It's a home to so many of us.
So you have a number of students you're accountable for in the Spartan Marching Band, a very large number. You want to talk a bit about the leadership characteristics of a band director of your students as they experience a Spartan Marching Band?
Sure. Well, it's a very important issue for me is that leadership and leading by example is something that comes from the top of every organization, which the two of you do so well and admirably, and we're all appreciative of it. And in my small slice of that, you know, there are 300 students who are in the class, Music 114, Spartan Marching Band, and they represent an amazing, I think, university priority, which is connectivity. They are from every college across the landscape. They're from every major. Most people think there's a ton of music majors in there. They're not. They're maybe 10% music majors. And the leadership piece for me is teaching the lessons of what opportunity you've been given. For example, you wear this uniform and it bears the insignia of the university, Block S and the MSU shield and the athletic Spartan head, and only so many people are privileged to wear that insignia. Mm-hmm. And what comes with it is the responsibility to perform well, to behave well, to represent everybody that came before you. Spartan Marching Band alumni are a really great group, and they started this sort of long green line of tradition. So before anybody feels like they're going to step out of bounds, let's say behaviorally, I spend a lot of time teaching the lessons of you have a responsibility and we represent a whole that is far greater than just, you know, maybe the reputation of our band. They represent the entire university at large because they get the privilege of jumping on an airplane and going to a bowl game and performing on behalf of, you know, the collective 40,000+ student peers, et cetera. So it's just really a high priority for me.
Are there things beyond the band, beyond Spartan Brass, beyond the Spartan Marching Band, that you look at as part of those special key inclusions, I guess, in what makes this university or Spartan Athletics collectively great, that you kind of sit back and just ponder and look at and are amazed?
Several reactions to that. Connected to the to my view as the director of the Spartan Marching Band, the list of things that I might think of at first are similar to the way I hope people think of the Spartan Marching Band, which is it's one of the university's points of pride. It's a hallmark, let's say. And within the band, there are many hallmarks, like you discussed the kick step, you know, this crazy entrance that we've been doing for 60 plus years.
And it's really hard.
It is hard to do. The coordination element is you know, welcome 80 new freshmen to the Spartan Marching Band. Now you have to learn how to do this.
Right.
And they look at you bug-eyed. You know? The Spartan Marching Band has this element to it where I think every Michigan State alum takes some ownership of it, whether they were in it or even really attended football games regularly. The music, the traditional music, etc. But for me, if you removed the university's founding fathers created this campus for us that we take diligent care of, that path I described from where I park my car to walk into the building, it's the same kind of thing. If there weren't the caretakers and the original design for something to be in bloom every month of the year, and I think it creates the atmosphere for which we learn and work.
Mm-hmm.
And every campus has a different priority there. And ours is one where the campus atmosphere is central to every Michigan State student, staff member, faculty member's experience on campus. I can't imagine taking the same buildings and plopping them down somewhere else, the same people, the same good open door policy that faculty have, et cetera. But you would really miss the experience if it weren't embedded right here in this beautiful East Lansing landscape that the that the founding fathers made a priority out of.
One of the great traditions that Mark misses because he has to work on a football Saturday is the sort of the same route that the band takes every Saturday. You want to talk about that tradition?
Absolutely. You and I have spent many Saturdays together on that because it's become one of your traditions on game day, which we appreciate. And the president will march with the band. I don't think we march up front. We walk and we wave and we say hi to folks along the along the path. But you know, Adams.
Does she kick step along the way?
We haven't gotten there yet. We'll work on that for this fall. Adams Field, newly named, recently named for the late great Walter Adams, formerly Landon Field, used to be the rehearsal space of the Spartan Marching Band. Well, that didn't work out so well, and I think back in the middle '80s they made that change because it was a neighborhood,
and it was also noisy for the College of Music.
It was. I remember. Clarinet lessons weren't always so positive when the band was blaring outside the window. That space is a really sacred space. So for how many decades did the band rehearse there? And that, of course, became that was the home of the band to pour out of the music building and form up and march to the stadium. Well, that space is still our warm-up area. And then the march down Kalamazoo Street, past Sparty, and into the driveway of Spartan Stadium. You know, I remember it being a really great thing when I was in the band. You know, the band marches the stadium to the street beat known as the Series, very traditional in its own right. But even in my time as director, I think it's changed dramatically. When I came here in 89, I remember the streets being pretty full on a given game day, even a popular, a home game, a Michigan game or a Notre Dame game, you know, where we're just packed to the gills. But it's really become a must-do game day experience in East Lansing to be on Kalamazoo Street, because we see the folks 10 deep all the way down. And when our TV friends from ABC or ESPN or whoever come to town, I always try to say, I think you guys should film this. I think you should get your camera crew here and tape this, because if you want to see something unique in college pageantry, put a camera up on Sparty, put a camera up on the upper deck, and get the bands just sort of, you know, kind of migrating to the stadium and having the game day ritual for a lot of Spartan fans is to wait for the band to come through, and then you can go to your seat. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine a day where the band ever stops that parade route before a game, whether we're housed in the music building or there's a new music building or other spaces for the band. That's a sacred thing. And there's nothing better in the fall than hearing the first sound of drums start up in the distance. And the next thing you know, football's around the corner. And, you know, I think we all know without that great football tradition, there would be no band, but it's really great to be a partner with them and to be at a place where it's, you know, it serves all very well. And we have a great fit, you know, Spartan band traditions and our way of life. I wouldn't change it for anything. It has a belief system. And the students who are in it pass this great tradition down every year in the healthiest way, and I'm really proud of that. I'm really proud that they are marking time during their college career in a place that teaches them so many other life skills. And I think it's one of the great classes on campus, and the diversity of who's in it and the rest. It's just a great joy.
If I had a kid who I thought wanted to be in the marching band, what advice would you give me as a parent to get my kid in the Spartan marching band?
Sure. That's a great question. and there are a lot of them out there, too. I'm never worried about the kind of student who's made it through high school and has been a successful student and participant, say, in a good high school band program, because they've already figured out the management of time. Because commitment to a high school band program is very much like commitment to an athletic team or a club that demands time and dedication and preparation. You've already figured that part out. I think everybody would agree that students who are on their way to Michigan State University need to know that we want you to participate in something else besides sleeping and studying and going to class, because there's an abundant number of offerings. And so you need that break. You need that two-hour break in the afternoon to do something physical, to be part of, representing school spirit, let's call it that. But the nitty-gritty of it is the best instrumentalists and performers, auxiliary performers, will make the band through an audition. And how do you start the path to a good and successful audition? You start with your high school band director and you say, please coach me up. I want to go to Michigan State, and I know the band has a great reputation. And help me set a course for, you know, some discipline practice and practicing the right thing. So when I do that audition in early June, I'm successful. And I love it, too, when students email or call or visit and say, I'd like to audition for the band. What would you recommend that I do? And so we just shower them with all the, here are the resources and here are the excerpts, and we'll see you on June 8th or whatever the audition date is.
I think that's part of the, what I would call the Michigan State character, that what happens to be ready for an audition isn't a secret. That if you're an individual that may not be in the very best band program in the state, but still want to do this, you can call, you
Absolutely.
Can email, you can have access to music, to things that would, if you work hard.
I'll give you an example. The drum line, the percussion section in the marching band is considered the best of its kind in the whole country. There's no question about it. And it's not an accident. And it recruits a high-level student over and over and over again. And I'm always amazed that they just keep coming out of the woodwork. Like when three great snare drummers leave, boy, are we going to find three snare drummers of this caliber? We're going to find 20 snare drummers of that caliber, and we're going to take the best three. But the accessibility to how to be successful is shown in, we do help sessions on Thursday night, all second semester in Dem Hall. They're high school kids that drive a couple hours away to sort of work out with our drummers, and they stand there in Dem Hall and they drum together, and they get, and John Weber, the percussion teacher, creates these help sessions to help these kids get successful. It would be like quarterback camp in mm-hmm. the summer. I mean, we want to identify the very best, and we want to help you get ready for it. So I think we help ourselves by just creating this accessibility, and it's just part of what we do.
That was John Madden, the director of the Spartan Marching Band, talking with Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis and Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon. This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Russ White for MSU Today. It was a fateful day in 1975 at the Student Union at Michigan State University when Jack Epps Jr., a graduate and award-winning student filmmaker, returned to his alma mater for coffee and chili with one of his former instructors, Jim Cash. Epps had made the trek to Hollywood after graduation and had begun to make some inroads, scripting episodes of such TV series as Kojak and Hawaii Five-0. But he wanted to move to the big screen. During the course of a 40-minute conversation, Epps and Cash mapped out the skeleton plots for 10 motion pictures, of which several would actually be produced. Although Cash chose to remain living in Michigan and the duo would rarely see each other face-to-face after that meeting, through telephone and computer modem, they became a commercially and financially successful writing team. The pair teamed up on such popular 80s films as Top Gun, Legal Eagles, and The Secret of My Success.
I was a student, obviously, here at Michigan State undergraduate, and I had made some movies. And so I thought if I'm going to make movies, I should learn how to write them. So there was one screenwriting class, and I went to get into the class, and the class was filled. I couldn't get in. So I went and lobbied the professor to let me into the class, and that was Jim Cash. And he did let me in the class. And so I took the class, learned a little bit from Jim, and then we just stayed in touch. I liked his writing. He was a novelist at that time, and I was wanted to be in film. And so we just stayed in touch over a period of years, and eventually we decided to work together. And we worked long distance for 25-plus years. I was living in Los Angeles, and Jim continued to live in East Lansing.
How does the creative process work for you, Jack?
In general, creativity is something that I think you're just sort of stuck with. And it's like either you discover this part of you or you don't, but you still have it your entire life, and you find different ways to do it. And for me, it was actually by taking classes here at the university, I wrote some short stories and things as part of a GE class, American Thought Language. And I realized I really liked it, and it satisfied a lot of the creative things I wanted to be doing. I mean, I didn't know they're creative. It's just stuff I really like to do. And so, you know, being here, the university gave me lots of opportunities to continue to pursue my creativity in taking creative writing classes, becoming an English major, literature, and just pursued it. And together, you know, I found somebody, Jim Cash, who was a great partner and a great collaborator, and we just found ways to use our different creative talents and approach to meld them together to a really lovely partnership.
What's your advice for MSU students today who want to follow in your footsteps?
Well, my advice to anybody who has a feeling that they're creative and they want to pursue the creative arts in any area is to do it. Be passionate about it, and don't listen to all the naysayers, but to basically believe in yourself and realize, one, this is a great university. You have all the opportunities to pursue any creative arts here and to do it. Two, don't be stuck just in your area. Like, I thought it was writing, and it became filmmaking. And that sort of was not what I thought it was going to be, but what it became. And that's what the university gave me, the opportunity to try to make a film. It gave me classes to try different areas, because what you think you might want to do is not maybe what your best creative talent is. But I also think you have to be brave. You have to be willing to take risks. You have to be willing to give all for your art. It has to be all passionate and encompassing, because otherwise you won't succeed.
How did MSU impact you and who you've become and continue to become, Jack Epps Jr.?
Well, you know, what's great about Michigan State is it gives you an opportunity to explore. There's so much here to discover and to just learn about. When I came here, I was a pre-med student, and it was 1-8 a.m. English class in a headwind that told me I was not cut out for medicine, because if I couldn't make it to that class at 8 a.m., I surely wasn't going to make it through med school. And so I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I was pretty lost. I spent a couple years here sort of roving around, and I did find creative writing, and I like that a lot, but I was still, it still was not the total passion for me. And, you know, what this university does is give you opportunities. And I think the biggest mistake a student can make is stay locked in an area and stay fixed and not take care, not explore other things, even if they know what they want to do. Broadening your life and your horizons, and Michigan State gives you that opportunity to really see all of the world in one remarkable campus.
Are there points you hope to make when you talk with students?
No. When I talk to the kids, there's no point I really want them to take away. And the reason is because everybody gets something else. And so there's nothing specifically I want to say, you must do this. What I want to do is just talk as a creative person, realize that, look, if you're creative, I'm like you, we're together, and, you know, maybe you can learn something from my journey and maybe you can't, but the most important thing is to believe in yourself. That's the hardest thing about being creative, is there's so much doubt we all have in our minds all the time. So how do you go off in a creative field when this world of doubt? That's difficult to do, and that takes faith in yourself and a willingness to take chances. And the truth is, the more chances you take, the more times you fall on your face, okay? Because that's the truth of all sort of, you know, entrepreneurial, creative sort of endeavors. But it's the people that get back up and keep doing it again and again that succeed, because they have that passion and long-term commitment.
Jack, are there myths or misunderstandings most of us have about Hollywood and how it operates?
Oh, probably. You know, I've been in Hollywood Hills, and I'm sitting by the pool reading scripts and calling, you know, get PG on the phone. It's actually a job. You know, being a writer and working in the movie industry is actually having a job. And I have a very sort of 9-to-5 blue-collar approach to my work, that it's not about being hit by inspiration. It's about perspiration. You know, 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. I think that was Edison who said that. And so that's the misconception, that they think everyone's just out there in la-la land, you know, all floating in the hot tub. I have a hot tub. It's broken, but I have a hot tub. You know, so, but it's really, you know, it is dedication. Any job you do, creative or any area, you have to be dedicated to it. And it has to be something that you enjoy, because there's nothing worse than doing a field that you don't want to be doing. And if that's where you are, then you need to be look for something that's going to be fulfilling to you, whether it's creative or it's just a different area of your life.
What are your thoughts on passion in one's profession, Jack?
I mean, you do have to like what – you really have to be passionate about what you're doing. You have to have a feel for it. It's something that sort of find fulfilling in some way, shape, or form. And I think there's a real sort of – you know, society tells us we should consume and consume and consume and consume. And yet what we really want to do is do things that fulfill us. And sometimes you can't be a massive consumer when you're trying to get yourself started. So you have to realize what are most important in your life, which is you save your pennies and save your nickels and support yourself in something you love so that you can get that as your full-time job. And that's – people want it to – they want things now. And careers take time to build. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of dues. You have to pay dues right now. You know, there's a lot of internships that people have to do for long periods of time before they get hired. I don't like it, but that's the way things are, and therefore you have to be doing things you really enjoy.
Do you worry about today's young people being consumed with the new technology and social media?
I think it's a generational thing. I truly do. I think that this is who the world is, and this is who they are, and this is the life they're living. I mean, that's sort of like people saying, you know, boy, these horses are sure great. I really love my horse, and now with this iron horse, this car thing, it's not the same anymore. I don't get to put it to bed at night. And I think it really is generational. This is their world. This is the world we live in today. And it will evolve out of the way it's going to be. You know, there's always yin and yang. There's always extremes. And things will go many different directions. But, you know, we move at an incredibly fast clip. And I think it's sort of like, you know, either get on and get with it or watch it sail.
You love coming back to MSU, don't you?
You know, it's always great coming back to this campus. I mean, last night, the first thing I did was park the car, found a meter. Hard to find a parking space, I got to tell you. I found a meter and quickly grabbed it. So that's never changed, you know, parking on campus. But, you know, walking in the Commons area and Beaumont Tower and hearing the tower ring, I mean, you know, every alumni goes, you know, it just sends chills up your back. I don't have a student if I loved it as much, you know what I mean? You walk by and say, oh, there's that tower. But, you know, coming back here, it really is time traveling. It throws you back to, I mean, I start thinking about being a freshman. And, you know, college isn't all easy stuff. Everybody says, oh, you're college. You know, there's a lot of things that the people go through. It's a period of amazing growth and development. And you start as a baby, really. You start as like this very know-nothing from high school, and you come out really with a lot of experiences, a lot of maturity. Still a hell of a lot to go. The 20s aren't easier, you know. The 20s are like, wow, boy, it's a big ball you pushed up the rock. But, you know, I love this place. I love Michigan State because of what it has given me, the opportunity to find myself in this very, you know, it's a large university. I came from a very small high school. I had 32 in my graduating class, okay? So coming to this university, being a large, how large it was, at first was a very difficult transition. But once I realized how much was here and how much opportunity I could take and how I could explore, you realize the size is such a benefit. And I think that's what's so special here, you know? So when I think of Michigan State, I think of it as a place that just gave me lots of opportunities to find and discover myself. And I think that's one of the biggest parts of college, is not only just what do you learn, how can you apply it, what job you can get, but who am I? And what do I want? And how can I actualize these things? And how can I be this person? And, of course, I found my wife here. We're still married. We have two kids. And that's a good thing. You know, that's that's a benefit.
That's Michigan State University College of Arts and Letters alumnus Jack Epps Jr., who along with his partner and late MSU Professor Emeritus Jim Cash were a successful Hollywood screenwriting team. For more on the college, please visit cal.msu.edu. I'm Russ White for MSU Today.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear this show again, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.